one or the other on the news. You hear, oh, everything's going to be fine, or you hear, I told you so, I told you this was going to happen, and it's only going to get worse. There's not a whole lot of middle ground when it comes to these stock market corrections, because they're emotionally, there's no middle ground when you have a 600-point drop in a day. And it leads me to kind of think through, what is that middle ground? What is just kind of reality? What do you need to work through when we go through these really difficult periods of time for markets? And it made me think that, and this is kind of the theme for today, I want you to think this through as I talk this through and hopefully help you get through, again, what are really pretty difficult markets here. We had, over 600-point drop. That was just one day of the week. The NASDAQ fell almost 4%. The S&P 500 fell more than the NASDAQ, down 4%. And this is just for the week, down 3% for the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Now negative on the year, the S&P 500 negative on the year. So just a lot of damage and carnage that's happened just in, a pretty short period of time. And it reminds me of the fact that investing is a mix between what you think will happen versus what you can tolerate that actually happens. And I'll say that again, because this is really about, you think things are going to be fine, and we know stocks do well over time, but then we want to be diversified for periods of time like this, and then you go through a time like this, and then you may say, well, wait a minute, this mix, I'm still not quite comfortable. And those are some of the conversations I actually have had over the last couple of weeks. And the conversations are with folks that are just right now, they're maybe kind of rethinking, well, hey, I'm just not comfortable. I might have what looks like a moderate balance or even a moderately conservative balance, but I'm just still not quite comfortable with it yet, Wes. What do we do? So today is really to talk through, if you're in that middle ground where you're just, you know, you're supposed to do it this way, but it still doesn't feel right. I want to maybe walk through the reality of investing. Again, investing is a mix between what you think is going to happen and what you can tolerate that actually happens, and tolerate by going through a week like this. And that's followed by following a couple of really rough weeks as well. So another tough week for your investments in 401k. If you're invested, you felt this week. Two, you've got all these other unsettling headlines. You've got bombs in the mail all over the country. Massive moves in the Dow Jones. You hear the headlines, worst month for stocks since 2009. Correction territory now for the NASDAQ. The S&P hit a down 10% intraday at one point, so correction territory for these major averages. $8.5 trillion lost in September, all in a week. And this is where it gets, I'm not going to say it gets confusing, but these are the cross currents of being an investor. All in a week where third quarter GDP just got reported. So we're just now in the fourth quarter, but what happened only a couple of weeks ago? How much is this U.S. economy growing? Well, reported a 3.5% growth rate, which is a massive growth rate for a $20 trillion economy. That's a phenomenally strong number for an economy our size. If I go back and I look at, we always trying to figure out, do we go into recession? Last week, we talked about the 12 sub-cycles to try to get a little granular to really see, hey, Are we about to tip over into recession? Because we know when we go into recession, that's really bad for stocks. If we stay out of recession, these corrections just stay garden variety corrections, uncomfortable, but still kind of garden variety. One of my favorite charts of the week, a piece of research through looking at the U.S. real Fed funds rate. And this is not a complicated topic here. Recessions, and I'm going to explain what real is versus nominal, but recessions don't start with 0% real interest rates. What is real? Well, real in terms of an interest rate, you take the nominal rate of the Fed. So let's say here are the real numbers. You take the nominal rate from the Fed, what the Fed has pegged the federal funds rate at, and then you subtract whatever inflation is. And then you get the real inflation. So think of it this way. If the Fed is at around, let's call it 2%, and inflation is 2%, that means that real interest rates are effectively zero. So you're getting charged, if you're getting charged 2% on assets, let's say you get a loan, and just inflation itself is growing at 2%, then technically the real rate is just 0%. The good news with this statistic here in this research is that recessions really only start, and this goes all the way back to kind of post-World War II. We do not get a recession unless real interest rates are at least in the 3% range. We're nowhere near that. So really at least 3%, typically 4% or higher. So at 0% today, federal funds is 2.25%. Inflation is around 2.25%. That means that the real rate is 0%. So at 0%, historically, we are nowhere even close to recessionary levels. Yet another important reminder of, again, we've got the stock market over here, we've got the economy over here. We've just got to make sure that the economy itself isn't completely rolling over, and no better time to do that than right now as we go through the stock market side that's gotten so difficult. Because you and I, again, we both know that the economy and stocks, so the economic environment and the stock environment, they don't always hold hands. They don't move in lockstep. There are plenty of periods of time. There's plenty of examples where we've got a good economy, bad stock market, good stock market, bad economy, you name it. There are plenty of down markets, and that's what we're experiencing today, is that we have a down stock market, a really rough market, but arguably an extraordinarily strong economy. And those two, again, they don't always line up. There's a lot of really important examples about this. Go back to just 2015. We had no recession. We just lived through that a couple years ago. We know we didn't go into a recession. It wasn't a super robust growth economy, but no recession at all. Stock market dropped 15% in 2015. How about 2011? Again, no recession in 2011. The headlines kind of got scary. United States debt got downgraded by S&P. There were a couple of pretty scary global headlines happening. Stock market down 21%. 21%, not just a correction. That's technically a bear market just in 2011. Again, no recession. Economy stayed okay. And again, there's tons of examples here. Go back to 1976, no recession. Stock market minus 19%. So there are lots of different examples of a stock market that gets nervous, gets emotional. And arguably, there's a lot of emotion tied to this market. Not to mention, we have the midterm elections coming up and now what we could count in days versus just weeks. And you're worried about, well, how's this election going to go? What's happening with China? Are interest rates going up? So it's just kind of this long list of no particular issue, I think, is a dagger for the economy. But you put all them together, all these bricks, let's call them, in the wall of worry, then you start to build up this wall of, there are a lot of things happening. But the bottom line here is, as uncomfortable as these stock market corrections are, and I know they're uncomfortable, they're often, and again, you've heard this, they're the best time to be buying and the best time to really be investing. Now, hold the phone for a second, because you're out there saying, Wes, I'm already invested. That doesn't help me. Fair. I get it. So it may not be an opportunity then, if you're already invested, it may not be an opportunity to double down and buy more if you're already invested. But it's certainly not a time to be selling. Certainly not a time to be running for the hills. I always think that for some reason, I always think of the beach ball analogy, where I think of a falling market, particularly in a good economy where we are today, as pushing a beach ball down and down, lower and lower beneath the water surface. And at some point, so think about that exercise where you kind of get the ball into the water, then it starts to get harder and harder as you push it lower. So that's the market. At some point, the pressure of the good economy will push the ball back up above the water. The ball will rise back to where it should be. As you get this greater and greater disconnect between, hey, the stock market is doing poorly, even though the economy is good. And I think that's really where we are right now. When sell-offs become attractive, well, we are at approximately 50% or half of the companies in the S&P 500 are already in a bear market today, down 20%. That's a bear market. Remember, correction 10% negative, bear market 20%. And it kind of makes sense. We're right around that correction level for the S&P 500. Well, about half of stocks are down in actual bear market territory. If you look back over the course of past corrections, that's the level that typically starts marking a turning point, right around what's happening today. And it doesn't happen in a day or even in a week, but you start to get enough carnage. And so stocks go on sale. And to some extent here, when you get half of all stocks in a bear market territory, you're talking about this is a massive sale on a massive scale, and that brings in droves of new buyers, and the beach ball rises back up to the top. We're probably getting closer and closer to that kind of tipping point. Now, there's also this argument or this question that you still have in your head is, well, how much risk is too much? This is a nervous month for folks. So are you maybe questioning a little bit, well, I'm balanced and I'm supposed to do some in stocks and some in bonds and some in REITs, but that doesn't feel good enough just yet, because investing is a mix between what you think is going to happen and what you can tolerate that actually happens. And these are the periods of time when you kind of get tested. We're going to talk that through. Also, phone lines open 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750 here in the studio. Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. 404-872-0750. Go to the phones here. Let's go to the phones. Jim, who joins us from Indian Land, South Carolina. Jim, what's going on? How can I help?
Yes, I'm about to retire at the end of this year, and I will have a 401k and some expected income from, you know, Social Security and a former employee. I'm considering moving some funds in the 401k over into an immediate income annuity, and of course leaving the rest in a moderately conservative market. I wanted to get some feedback as to whether that is a good strategy for consistent income during this ups and downs of the market and going into retirement.
Sure. So how much, when we do an immediate annuity, just for folks listening, you're deciding to take a portion of money and pretty much just turn it over. So that's obviously the downside of this is you're giving up some liquidity, but you're in return, you're getting a payout typically for life, right? So it Correct. Depends on the numbers. Number one, my first rule of thumb is you want to never do any more than 20% of your assets in one of these immediate annuities, because you don't want to give up. Sure, you can get a payout, and it might even be a tractor payout, but you can never get to that money again. So you it's only for a pretty limited amount of or percentage of your overall investment assets. So I'd say no more than 20%, first rule of thumb. Secondarily, what are the numbers, Jim? I mean, if you put $100,000 in this, what's it give you for life, or how much are you thinking about doing?
I was thinking somewhere in the neighborhood of about 30%, which basically would give somewhere in the neighborhood of about $2,000 more per month for life.
Okay, but how much? 20%. Yeah, so is that $200,000 that you'd have to put in, or how much are you putting in?
That would be about $300,000.
Okay. So, and you'd get about $2,000 a month?
Right.
Okay. So 24,000 divided by 300,000, it's about an 8% payout. It's not a guaranteed rate of return, because it doesn't necessarily count how you could live for 5 more years. You could live for 30 more years, right? So that's part of this question. So hang on. This is a good question. We'll go through more of these numbers. Jim from Indian Land, South Carolina, if you can just hang on the line here, we'll be back talking about immediate annuities. Is the payout worth it or not? What are some of the things you should consider when Money Matters returns?
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss, certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. And we're going to go right back to this question. And I think we actually had a, if we've got a, we got the call drop, but I'm going to answer the question anyway. So if you're just tuning back in or you're listening via podcast, the question really was, hey, I'm thinking about putting money in this is 70 years old, thinking about putting $200,000 into an annuity, an immediate annuity that gives a payout that's around $2,000 a month. And the caller's question was, hey, I'm thinking about doing 30% of my money in this. Think about this. There's all these other things to consider. Well, we know that there's Social Security and there's a pension involved here, and this would be another stream of income. And then that'd be this would the immediate annuity be the third stream of income. And then the fourth stream of income would be regular investment income from other investments. So this is kind of an interesting, as interest rates have started to go up. Remember, we went for the better part of a decade with the Federal Reserve keeping interest rates pretty much at zero. And all interest rates were low. If you know what I'm talking about, if you have your mortgage rate's probably 3.5%, if you got a mortgage a couple years ago, I've seen people in the 2.5% range, 2.25% range. I mean, interest rates have been ultra low. So borrowing costs have been low, but so that's a good thing. On the other side of the equation, bond rates, treasury rates have been extraordinarily low, which has been not so good. It's also impacted things like immediate annuity payouts, because what does an annuity company do when you turn over $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 to them? Do you think they invest it in the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ? No, they buy bonds. And the better interest rates are on bonds, the better these payouts are going to be. And if you go through, and I just did a couple calculations on an immediate annuity, a website that'll show you, give you some ballparks of what different carriers are offering. That's about right. If you're age 70 and you want to start an income stream today, you can get about $1,800 to $1,900 a month. So that sounds pretty good, because that's approximately an 8%. You'd look at it as an approximate 8% rate of return, right? 24,000 divided by 300, that's 8% a year. Well, that's great, but what if you die in year five? Well, if you die in year five, you've gotten five payments of $24,000 a year. You've gotten 120 grand back. So you have now just given the annuity company, you've left on the table $180,000. And that's obviously the downside of these immediate annuities. You've got to turn over the money to the annuity company for the promise of getting paid forever. So you've got to live a really long time in order to get, at least just to get your money back. And that, I think, is the tough part about doing one of these annuities. You've got to, so we've got to live 12, 13 years just to get your money back, let alone what interest you could have gotten during that 12-year period of time. And today, you can buy a 10-year treasury bond now for well over 3% a year. I'd rather give, if you're going to lock money up and do something ultra conservative, I'd rather just do a government bond ladder that truly has no risk if you were going to hold to maturity, than put the money in the hands of an annuity company that then will potentially have it so that your spouse or your heirs don't get a whole lot in return. That's obviously if you do the life option. There are a lot of other options for these payouts. So you can do a lifetime income, which is what we were just talking about, or a lifetime income with a cash refund, lifetime income with a guaranteed period of time. The one that I typically see folks do, and this is whether you're thinking about getting a pension payout or an immediate annuity payout, these are the same kind of decisions you have to make. Do you do a life payout? Do you do a joint spousal payout so that covers your life and your spouse's life? Or do you do a period certain? At the very least, when you look at one of these options, I think you got to at least look at a period certain of at least a 15-year period. So that you get, if you die in year five, you get at least 10 more years, 15, of payments to your family. So at least kind of get your money back. These are the things you have to think about when you do, when you're getting an immediate annuity payout. I love multiple streams of income. So if you have a pension, great. You have Social Security, great. Maybe you do 10% of your assets in an immediate annuity to have yet another stream of income. But when you start to get to 25 and 30% of your liquid net worth and you're turning it over to an insurance company that effectively has that money now forever and your family doesn't, that's a calculus that I don't love from a planning perspective. Rather just spend my own money down, maybe get a 3% interest yield from something like a treasury bond, at least the money still stays in my family. And the money in that context still lasts a very, very long time. So those are some of the things you've got to think about as you consider doing any sort of annuity product. The other thought is that these annuity companies are not guarantees. They give you a guarantee. They say, we guarantee you this. But that's a guarantee coming from a company. Companies, insurance companies, any sort of company, there's no perfect guarantee that they're going to stay in business and be able to make good on their promises. So the only true guarantee that backs up everything in the United States is the full faith and credit of the United States government, which also then goes back to the FDIC, which insures our bank deposits and our CDs for the most part. That to me is the only quote real guarantee out there. And even that's a question mark at some point with our national debt that is, call it $20 trillion and climbing. So just be careful when you're looking at a quote guarantee from any company, because there's rarely in life any real such thing. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. We'll continue to take your calls and your questions here in a super volatile week for stocks. We had another week where we had a 600 point negative day on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, down 3% for the week, down almost 4% for the S&P 500. The NASDAQ dropped in a similar fashion, down 4%. And every time we get one of these periods of time where we get a bunch of gains wiped out, and you've probably read $8 trillion lost in the last couple of weeks, kind of gets people nervous again. And rightly so. We get into a period of time where nobody likes to see really difficult weeks. You look at your portfolio, you look at your 401k, and you've lost that arguably thousands of dollars. It just kind of, it hurts. And I'm going to walk through the difference between knowing that investing is a mix between what you think will happen in stocks. Let's say I think stocks will go up over time versus what you can tolerate that actually happens. Meaning that in order to get that rate of return, I've got to go through some serious potholes. I've got to go over some serious speed bumps in order to get there. And in some cases, it doesn't work, or your portfolio is just too aggressive for what you can tolerate. Doesn't mean it's too aggressive over time. If you had an iron stomach, it might be too aggressive for you to handle, and you can't sleep at night. And then investing becomes uncomfortable, and it's self-defeating, and then you ultimately break and make a bunch of mistakes. And I don't want you to do that. So I want to kind of talk through this concept. Also, phone lines open. We may have time for one more call. So if you have questions about your particular scenario, whether it's an immediate annuity or any sort of annuity or a pension or a lump sum versus a pension or a Roth IRA or a regular IRA, we're here in the studio until 10 o'clock. So that give us a call in the studio, the number 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750 if you're in Georgia, or 1-800 outside of Georgia, 1-800-WSB-TALK. That's 1-800-972-8255. So again, let's talk about how much risk is too much risk. You know, this is a nervous month for a lot of folks. Not everybody reacts the same to these sell-offs. Not everybody reacts the same to bad news, which makes investing, again, this mix between what you think is going to happen versus what you can tolerate that actually happens. For example, you and I both know over time that the best place has been, at least over, this is over 100 plus years, best places for your money between stocks and bonds and cash is equities, U.S. stock market over time. By far, 10% rate of return versus 5 for bonds versus 2 for cash. Yet, unless you have an iron stomach, you likely have some sort of mix of all of these areas, and not just stocks, because we know it can get so volatile. You don't have a mix, or this asset allocation we did a show on a couple of weeks ago. You don't have a mix to maximize your returns. You do so to dampen just how nasty these corrections get, at least the stock corrections get. So you may know that you should be 80% in stocks. And this is, again, I've had a lot of conversations the last couple of weeks of folks, that families that I work with, that they may have 50% in stocks or 55% in stocks. And even we go through the periods of time like this, that even gets a little bit uncomfortable for them. So you may know that over time, you should be 80% stocks or 60% stocks. But if you go through a week like this or a month like this, and a month like this month of October, and you just can't sleep well at night, then it's okay to get nervous. In fact, it's important to do a real gut check on what your investment balance really needs to be or should be. Maybe 60% in stocks is too much for you. If you've gone through 3 weeks and you can't even sleep and you feel nervous every day, you turn on the TV and the market's down and it freaks you out, then yeah, you probably have too much exposure to stocks. Doesn't mean that over time, that's still not the best thing to do, but you've got to do it in the context of what you can handle, because investing is far beyond just the math. It's far beyond just the science of investing. It's the side that deals with emotion, how much you can really handle. Maybe 50% in stocks is too much for you. Maybe 40% is a better place for you to live. And I think these periods of time when we go through these gut checks for markets, I still don't want people to run for the hills, panic, sell everything, because we know that's a losing game, to sell everything and then try to get back into stocks and then sell everything, go back into. But it may be a time for you to readjust. The good news on readjusting today versus a year or two ago is that the safe side of the equation, we just talked about treasury bonds that are now paying over 3%. Even two-year bonds are paying close to 3%. So even short-term, ultra-safe investments are actually paying you something now, whereas a year ago and 5 years ago, they were paying you virtually zero. So today, you actually have some options if you want to get a little bit more conservative. I still don't want you running for the hills, but it may be a time to do a little bit of a gut check and reevaluate what your overall allocation is. It's okay to do so. You're listening to Money Matters. Good morning. Want to find me and the Money Matters team? Go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Happy to help you through your specific or individual cases as they may unfold. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. Have you ever wondered how much the average American has for, save for retirement in your 50s? This is the topic of my article for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution today. So if you pick up the Sunday edition of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution today, there's an article in the front of the business section, how much Americans in their 50s have saved for retirement. I'll give you a little bit of a preview here. So this is the Economic Policy Institute. This is statistics on this. According to the EPI, the average retirement savings balance, drum roll, and these are for households between the age of 50 and 55. I know there's some folks that are listening to Money Matters right now that are between the ages of 50 and 55. So this is Economic Policy Institute. Average savings balance, $124,831. That's the average retirement savings right now in America. For those between ages 56 and 61, we've got a little bit more time to save here. That number, a little bit higher, $163,577. So again, we look around, and Ryan and I were just talking about this. You think about in your neighborhood, you think, wow, this is a pretty nice neighborhood. Everybody's got money. Well, we've got to look at the context of all of America. It's not just your neighbors in Buckhead, right? This is America as a whole. Sometimes it's in these big metro cities that we live in, or these metro areas where everyone is kind of competing and earning and everybody's got a bunch of money. We've also got to remember what the rest of America looks like outside of our little bubbles. So with that, we covered a lot today. These stock market corrections we go through are they get difficult, and they get it's not a time to panic, but it's not ever a bad time to reassess either. If you feel like the way your position is just too volatile, then you may want to make an adjustment. I don't want you to sell everything and run for the hills, but it's okay if you want to adjust your portfolio a little bit. The safe side of the equation actually pays something now. That wasn't the case a year ago, or even certainly 5 years ago, or even a year ago. Today, Treasury bonds pay 2 to 3%, and that's for even some short-term versions. So with that, if you have questions throughout the week, easy to find me and the Money Matters team. Go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Stay tuned to the best programming on the planet right here, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.